Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Supporters of the so-called Parents' Bill of Rights say it puts parents, not the government, at the center of a child's education and health care. Opponents of the bill say parents are already a key part of their child's education and worry that it unfairly targets LGBTQ youth. Governor DeWine last week signed it into law, following months of testimony for and against it, saying parents are a child's first and best teacher. Republican Representative D.J. Swearingen is the primary sponsor of the bill, and he joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, Representative.
Thanks for having me, Amy. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. So can you tell us what sparked your interest in creating this piece of legislation? What problem were you hoping to solve?
Well, I think it was a piece of legislation that sought to uphold parents as the primary individuals responsible for their kids' lives. What really drew me to the bill especially was that numerous studies, peer-reviewed studies that you look at, show that when parents are involved in their children's lives, in school, sports, extracurriculars, band, theater, anything that the child is into, when parents are involved in those activities, when they're attuned to their kids' needs, when they're helping them get their needs met, the outcome for childhood development is exponentially better. And we'd heard some stories around the state, in other states as well, where, you know, parents were being cut out of the process, and we sought to try to rectify that situation and uphold parents as the primary caregivers, the primary individuals responsible for their kids, and really to ensure that, as a result, childhood outcomes for children were solid and improved.
Now, parents' rights, this bill ended up being called the Parents' Bill of Rights. Parents' rights is a popular buzz term of the moment. Mm-hmm. And with Republican legislatures across the country advancing bills like this, it kind of makes it sound like parents didn't have rights before. Was that really the case?
Not speaking from an absence of rights or anything like that, per se. I mean, that was the title of the bill. But again, the important thing to note here is the special bond between a parent and child. And that bond, I think, is readily observable. I mean, many of us were blessed to have good parents, some of us not, and that's unfortunate. But those with good parents, that they themselves had that experience or see others that did have that experience as well and could note that special bond between a parent and their child, know that there's something good about that bond that makes a positive impact on the child, and the data bears that out. To the converse, when that bond is not present, that actually presents a big problem for childhood development, unfortunately. And when that bond is not present, actually suicidal ideation increases about 1.5 times with kids. And that's really unfortunate, something that we should be aware of in the state of Ohio. So to uphold that bond between a parent and child is really important. Titles of the bill aside, the principle and the ideology behind the bill is what's driving the bus here.
Now, you mentioned it. I mean, not all parents are good parents. There are some parents out there that are not good parents. And sometimes the people at school are the only truly trusted adults in a kid's life. And that's what a lot of the opponents to this bill were saying, is that you are allowing some not so good parents access to children that maybe they shouldn't have.
That's a great point, Amy, and I'm actually very glad that you brought that up. And first, let me acknowledge that that's a very sad thing. That's a sad thing for those children because they don't deserve that. And that's a sad thing for our state because, you know, as a result, the outcomes for those childs are the cards are immediately stacked against them in the other side's favor. So, you know, heart goes out to those kids first and foremost. We were sure to make it very clear in the bill that if there's any type of abuse, which is horrible, and we do not want that, if there's any type of abuse in the household, the teachers are well within their rights and their obligations as mandatory reporters of abuse to go to protective services, to note the abuse, to go through that process, and to make sure that the child is protected. So we did not want to interfere with any type of process where there's any type of abuse going on in the home and shelter abusers in what they're doing in the home life. So if there is abuse going on It clearly states in the language of the bill that that's to be reported, and there's nothing that the bill is to do to interfere with that obligation.
Let's go through some of the key provisions of the law. It requires all school boards by the 1st of July to develop and adopt a policy to promote parental involvement in the public school system. One of the first provisions is regarding sexuality content. It must be age-appropriate and developmentally appropriate. So the law spells out what is and isn't sexuality content. Can you walk us through why you decided to include all of these specifics?
It comes from the principle that it's a bad precedent to set that parents wouldn't be involved in any conversations going on in schools surrounding sexuality or sexuality content. So to the extent those conversations are actually occurring in the classroom or in the school building, we want the parents to be made aware of those conversations that are ongoing. So again, you know, if there's going to be any type of instruction, if there's going to be any type of activity in the building on that material, we want the parents to be involved in that process. And again, the principle being that it's good for parents to be a part of those conversations with the children and to be in the know about that type of instruction or those types of conversations. Because again, we think, in our opinion, that it's not a great precedent to set that parents be cut out of conversations surrounding sexuality and children being involved.
Now, it also says that a parent can request that a student be excused from certain types of instruction, given an alternative assignment. Is that something that happens now if a parent is concerned, or was that did that really need to be put into law that the parent can do that?
It may. It may happen now, it may not, but we wanted to make clear that to the extent this was happening in the schools, that parents did have secondary options surrounding that type of curriculum.
Can you give me an example of sexuality content? Are you talking about like the talk in health class that many fifth graders get? Or are you also talking about if high schoolers read a book that, you know, has some sort of sexual connotation in it?
Well, any, you know, it's spelled out in the language of the bill, Amy, and I think the message is, again, if there's going to be any talk of sexuality content or anything along those lines that's spelled out in the bill, that parents are brought in and in the know. And I think most parents, you know, to the extent we're talking about books or literature, classical literature or anything like that, most parents don't have a problem with it. You know, it's fine. The key is that we want them to be involved and involved in the kids' educational process. So that was the goal there with that section.
If they are reading a book in any grade, actually, and the book involves a character having two dads or two moms, is that sexuality content?
Well, I think that the operative question there is that's up to the school and the parents. And that was the goal of the bill. So, you know, if there's any types of conversations around sexuality, that those would be discussed between the parents and the school. And, you know, without getting into the granular details, if the question is this something that we should tell mom and dad about, the Parents' Bill of Rights says, yes, err on the side of telling mom and dad about it and have that conversation with the parents. And 99% of the time, you know, I think that's going to be a healthy conversation. It's going to be a healthy thing to do. You know, on a case by case basis. So if a teacher has a concern and says, well, I don't know if this runs afoul of the Parents' Bill of Rights or not, what am I going to do? Well, tell mom and dad, you know, bring the parents in. I think that's a good thing. And the data bears out that that's a good thing.
Another provision that caused a lot of testimony to happen in whenever this bill was going through the process, to promptly notify a student's parents of any substantial change in student services, including counseling services, or the monitoring of a student's mental, emotional, or physical health or well-being. It goes on from there, but basically, can we expand on that? So school counselors are sometimes a very important trusted adult in a student's life.
Sure.
They can develop a rapport with a student. They can feel comfortable going to them for advice, guidance, you know, venting. Do counselors have to report every time a student visits a counselor?
If it would be a change in the student's health services, yes, we'd like the parents to be, again, involved in that process. So, you know, we understand and appreciate the role that counselors play in a kid's life, and we don't want to interfere with that. We just want mom and dad involved. And, you know, if a counselor has an issue that they think is important, they should bring mom and dad into the process. If a counselor suspects abuse, again, I believe that a counselor is also a mandatory reporter of abuse, and they should report the abuse. But at the end of the day, you know, we want mom and dad involved in the kid's life. We don't want the counselor or the teacher or the school administration to replace mom and dad.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a new Ohio law called the Parents' Bill of Rights with Representative D.J. Swearingen, the sponsor of the bill. So related to that, if a student goes to the school counselor and is having a concern, maybe related to LGBTQ issues or just not understanding themselves and what, you know, and transgender related issues, things like that. What if they tell the counselor, please don't tell my parents. My parents don't like this topic. They don't want to talk about it. And they're going to get really mad and at me. What is the counselor supposed to do?
Well, again, I think the counselors are trained, you know, in their process and their education process of recognizing signs of what's abuse and what's not. So if they think that there's abuse, that's an issue that they should bring up. But, you know, at the end of the day, again, back to the earlier comment that the question is, do we want kids speaking to people about sexuality without mom and dad's knowledge, consent, or presence in any manner whatsoever? That's a precedent that we have to be concerned about, because where does that lead to? That parents are cut out of those critical conversations in a kid's lives. I think that's something very important to grapple with. So if there's an abuse situation, then, you know, that should be absolutely dealt with. We don't want any types of abuse in school with parents or, you know, in the classroom in any setting. But we also want mom and dad involved. So, you know, if mom and dad are good parents and they're in the kids' lives and they want to be involved, they should be involved.
The School Counselors Association testified that they were worried about this because if the parent disagrees with the child's chosen lifestyle, that necessarily is not abuse, but it can make for a very uncomfortable living environment in the home. Who are the children supposed to talk to?
I think that they can keep having conversations with healthcare professionals or whoever they want to talk to. But at the same time, we have to be aware and conscientious of the fact that mom and dad also play a critical role in children's lives. And again, back to peer-reviewed studies and data, that when mom and dad are totally cut out of the process, that leads to poorer outcomes for children in the long run. So I think we also have to pay attention to that data, that it is critical that parents are involved and made aware of what's going on in schools, lest we have childhood outcomes that aren't as great.
There's another provision in the policy that says that parents are allowed access to a student's educational and health records kept by the school. Are there examples of parents being denied access to these records? Because as a parent, I would feel like I can get my student's health record. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was a clarifying point in the bill that we wanted to make unambiguously clear, is that parents do have access to those records at all time and at all times. And again, it stems from instances in other states and lawsuits that are currently pending in the state of Ohio where parents weren't made aware of issues that were ongoing in the school. So we did want to make it clear in the language of the bill that the parents have access to those records.
What kind of issues?
Not being involved.
Yeah, what kind of issues?
Being involved in the school.
But was there a specific health issue that led to that provision being put in there that someone told you about?
Yeah.
Like what?
There's an instance in Hilliard City Schools where a father was cut out of his daughter's educational process, and he did file a lawsuit. That's one such instance. There's other instances in other states that are publicly available of where this has also occurred.
Okay. And there's also a provision in there that said that the school must adopt a procedure for the parents to allow health services. So if the student wants to regularly see the nurse or the school counselor, parents have to approve that?
They at least have to be brought into the process, yes.
Would this include, you know, does this include visits to the nurse's office that are routine? Are parents going to have to sign? It just seems like there's a lot more paperwork happening now.
Well, I think there's a provision in the bill that if there's something going on at the school and the kid needs, immediate care, that they can get that care. I think that provision was inserted in the committee process just to make it clear that, like, look, if the kid scrapes their knee on the playground, we're not, you know, looking to have parents sign off on that type of situation. So that language is in the bill. But, you know, not to get into the granular specifics of the bill, it's that if kids are seeking services at school, we're not looking to prevent that. That's not what we're trying to do. We're making clear that mom and dad should be involved in that process. And that's between the school and the parents. It's been that way for a long time. And that's something that we just really want to uphold in this situation.
I mean, yeah, you don't want to get into the granular specifics of the bill, but some of these specifics are going to be hard for some schools. They're going to have to make decisions. They could expose themselves to a lawsuit if they make the wrong decision because of this law.
But this law is important. Parents being involved in their kids' lives is important. That's something that we want to uphold and needs to be upheld in the state of Ohio for the reasons I stated previously, that when parents are involved in their kids' lives, childhood outcomes are improved. So it may be difficult. There may be some growing pains. We think that schools and parents will ultimately get this right, and eventually it'll be a very fluid process. But moms and dads and parents, they deserve to be involved in their kids' lives. And just because something may be hard from the get-go doesn't take away from the importance of this being done.
Even the most involved parent can get overwhelmed from communication from a school. I can speak from experience. So I can see, what if schools err on the side of caution and over-communicate? If they're telling, like, they're sending out a list, this is every lesson. And are you the parents need to go through that line by line if they want to know what's going on, I guess?
If they want to, you know, but again, if a school, I don't think a school can over-communicate with a parent. You know, schools over-communicating with a parent to letting them know what's going on in the school is a good thing. And then it's up to the parents as to what they want to pay attention to or not pay attention to. I personally hope they pay attention to all of it, because that's good for the parents, it's good for the kids, and it's really good for the schools to have parents paying attention to the communication that's coming their way. I'm sure there's a lot of schools and teachers that would love to have parents pay more attention to what's going on in the school because it would make their lives a little easier. So, you know, if there's over-communication, I think that's totally fine, and that's a good thing. And then it's up to the parents as to what they want to do on the back end with that information.
We're running out of time. I appreciate your time today, but I wanted to squeeze in that in the lame duck session, a provision was added that schools must come up with a policy for religious release instruction time. It doesn't mean that schools must allow students to be released for religious instruction, but it just means that they need a policy either way. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's my understanding. And that was really a Senate priority that was inserted in the Senate Education Committee.
And this all stems from LifeWise Academy, a Christian group that has grown significantly. It offers religious release for Ohio schools. Did you see the recent Dispatch story that found that the LifeWise Academy raised $35 million, mostly through donations, and tripled its profits last year? It got a lot Go ahead.
Yeah, I literally just read that yesterday evening.
And so, I mean, having each school have to come up with a policy, I feel like LifeWise Academy has kind of spurred all of this. But what's your opinion on other types that are not Christian groups? There's the Satanic Temple based in Salem, Massachusetts, that's going to organize religious release time for a Marysville school. What are your thoughts on religious release policies in schools as a lawmaker of this bill?
Yeah, great question. You know, again, I think this was really a Senate priority that was put in there, and we were fine with. The First Amendment freedom of religion is very important, and I think it is longstanding precedent that kids can practice their faith if they choose, in public settings. So it stems from that precedent. Do I approve of the Satanic Temple having extracurricular activities for kids? Absolutely not. I don't. Is that a byproduct of First Amendment expression? It very well could be.
So can any religion, if the school district writes their policy and says religious release is allowed, you don't care if the kids miss some of the school day for any religion?
I think that's an important issue, and how the language was drafted was that the local school board is allowed discretion to determine what curriculum is critical and what is eligible for release time. So we did defer to the local school districts on that issue. So it's up to them to decide.
So if Marysville writes a policy and says religious release is allowed because, for example, they want LifeWise Academy to be there, then they also have to allow the Satanic Temple, correct?
That's the way it reads.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your time and thank you for explaining the Parents' Bill of Rights. You've been listening to Republican Representative D.J. Swearengin, the primary sponsor of the bill that has been known as the Parents' Bill of Rights. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Amy.
And coming up, we're going to talk about how school counselors regard the new law. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
As baby boomers age, their healthcare and housing needs will increase exponentially. Is our society prepared to support this future aging population? Join WOSU Public Media for Inside Caregiving, a multimedia project exploring health disparities and inequities, from insurance to policymaking to caring for the caregivers. Subscribe to WOSU's Untangled Caregiving podcast and join us for a live town hall on February 26th. Learn more at wosu.org/inside.
Elon Musk helped President-elect Trump return to the White House. Now, car safety advocates are worried that Musk will influence federal agencies regulating businesses like Tesla.
Tesla has been overselling the effectiveness of its technology for years. And a lot of people buy into that because it's tweeted about that way.
The fight over crash reporting requirements on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on 89.7 NPR News.
Confirmation hearings for President-elect Trump's cabinet have begun. The inauguration is just days away. We'll preview Trump's second term, discuss Biden's final days in office, and remember Jimmy Carter with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. That's tomorrow from 10 to noon on All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich, on 89.7 NPR News. Ohio's Parents' Bill of Rights became law recently. Supporters say it puts parents, not the government, at the center of a child's education and health care. Critics say it unfairly targets LGBTQ youth. What does it do to spell out how school staff, such as counselors, must adhere to the law? Joining us now is Sean Grimm. He is the executive director of the Ohio School Counselor Association, which represents the interests of Ohio school counselors. He's also a full-time counselor at Archibald High School in Northwest Ohio, and he's worked in the public school system for 25 years. Welcome to All Sides, Sean.
Thank you.
So several school counselors testified in opposition to this bill before it came law. It is law now, so in your understanding, what does it require counselors to do now that was not required before?
So I think especially for school counselors and some other of the professional school psychs and school nurses and stuff, a lot of us, our professional standards, oftentimes, we're kind of trained with concepts of confidentiality and informed consent and how we kind of work with kids and navigate conversations and things. So I know for a lot of those professionals, this bill kind of create some nuances, some different nuances that we're gonna maybe kind of have to work around, you know, on kind of how we establish those safe spaces for kids, to be able to kind of, you know, share things and be able to kind of get some supports that they might need.
Do you feel compelled now that any conversation you have with a student, you're going to have to take notes and give them to the parent?
Not necessarily so much from that extreme. The thing I like to often kind of say for those of us that work in education, parental engagement and working with parents has been a primary tenet, regardless of the bill. So, that's a piece that we always work with. You know, when we talk about really sensitive things that kids might bring, sometimes to the adults at school, you know, oftentimes the first question I'll ask a student is, you know, do your parents know, what's going on with the other adults in your life and things like that. So from that standpoint, you know, a lot of us will kind of continue to work with kids in a similar manner, than what we've normally worked with. Again, there's just going to be some changes with some of those nuances with things that maybe weren't necessarily kind of mandated reported topics that you know, we might have to have some extra considerations and when we work with kids and talk with kids, kind of how those notifications might need to go back to parents.
So in the last segment, we were talking with the representative who sponsored the bill, and he was very intent in saying that parents should be at the center of their child's education. Parents should be highly involved in students' lives. He agreed with me when I pushed back and said that not all parents are good parents. Not everyone does a good job at that. He agreed with me, but he said that, you know, counselors have to report, they're mandatory reporters for abuse. I don't know if you heard me saying to him, but sometimes if the parent and the child just fundamentally disagree about something, that can be a lot on a child's mind, but just disagreeing is not abuse, right?
Yes.
So whenever a student comes to you and says that they're fighting with their parents about XYZ, it could be anything. I mean, it doesn't even have to get into LGBTQ or transgender issues. If they're fighting with their parents about something, they're not going to want to talk to you about it if you have to go back and tell the parent. Do you agree?
Yeah. So that's definitely one of those things that it's definitely one of those things that's a concern. And it's not even just with the school count, you know, this bill applies to all educators, you know, so, we recognize that it's important for kids to have caring adults in their lives, you know, including parents. But I think most parents would agree that it's also beneficial for their kids to have other caring people, you know, so whether it's coaches, teachers, you know, a school counselor, it could be the cafeteria worker that's, you know, says hi to the kid every day and, you know, or whoever, you know, so we definitely, you know, we want kids to hopefully be able to still feel like they'll be in a position that they can come and talk to people at schools if they need to. You know, I think one of the things that will change is those of us as adults will definitely have to kind of be more cognizant of how we kind of educate our students to kind of know, like, so that way they know ahead of time of what maybe to be mindful about that they bring up with adults or topics. The downside of that, is that it definitely could put some kids in a position where they don't feel like they have somebody they could go talk to, because they could, you know, that fear or that concern of, you know, if I say this thing to an adult, they're going to automatically call my mom and dad about it. And a lot of the things that the kids would share with us, you know, we already do kind of work with them on making sure their parents are brought into the loop.
Prior to this bill, if a child came to you and said, please don't tell my parents, but would you sometimes still need to tell them?
Yeah, sometimes there might be some situations where there are things like that would have to happen. A lot of times what we would do in those situations is work with the student on how that looks and how that happens. So sometimes there's just things that kids are just afraid to tell their parents. You know, I use the example of, you know, if I have a young lady come into my office who found out she was pregnant, obviously that's the kind of thing that, like, you know, a school is not going to keep secret for 9 months, you know. so So we definitely would work with that student, and having that conversation. Do your parents know, and if they don't, what's your hesitation? Why haven't you informed them yet? What's the concern? How can we figure out how to help you get that information shared out? So it might be doing some role playing. It might be, looking at, planning out consequences or situational things that might happen with those conversations. Sometimes it's volunteering to even just assist a student in having that conversation.
You're listening to All Sides.
You might schedule a meeting with the parent and sit down.
Oh, sorry. You're breaking up a little bit. So that's why I started to do my reset there. Maybe if you...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. If you turn your camera off, it might help with our bandwidth issues here. Yeah. But let me just say, you're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the recently enacted Ohio law, the Parents' Bill of Rights, with Sean Grimm, the executive director for the Ohio School Counselors Association. And Sean, let me just make sure, are you still there with us?
Yes.
Yep. Great. Okay. I'm sorry about interrupting you. You did freeze on me there. So there were testimony about the bill from the School Counselors Association. It emphasized that counselors already collaborate with parents. So what does that collaboration look like when it involves the idea of sexuality content? There's a lot of provisions in this bill that spell out in detail what sexuality content is. And it has a wide range. I could spend the next 20 minutes reading it to you, but I'm sure that you know. How do schools talk to parents about sexuality content?
That's a good question, because some of the concepts that might fall under that sexuality content are oftentimes things that I'm not sure how prevalent they're happening in schools. Mm. Obviously, in schools, we've got our thing, our sex education that happens in our health classes, and, conversations with STDs, which a lot of those are kind of exempted or already kind of covered under other provisions. Mm-hmm. I know one thing on my end, I've been trying to kind of think, well, what are some of these lessons or curriculums or situations that might be happening. I guess I'm trying to think of a current events class that might do a lesson on LGBTQ rights. Mm. or kind of the movement, that potentially might be one of those kind of things that it possibly could fall underneath this. But I think it's a little bit of a misconception and stuff that there's massive or widespread conversations happening in schools, kind of educating or talking with kids about exploring their sexuality, identifying, whether or not they, question things about their gender or those kind of things. But obviously, if those are, structured conversations around that would be things that I would assume would be shared out with parents ahead of time.
Yeah, I asked the representative specifically, like if a school at any age level was going to read a book that involved a character having two moms or two dads, if that would need to be reported. And he basically said that he would prefer just over communication, and that schools err on the side of caution and just tell parents what they're teaching and what's being talked about. So then I asked him, is that overly cumbersome for schools? What are your thoughts on that?
I would say, yeah, that could be, could be overly cumbersome. I guess, for me, I really look at this as what are those really kind of targeted, intentional, structured type things that schools might be doing, whether it's a curriculum that's being introduced, whether it's a specific lesson, whether it's bringing in, an outsider from a mental health agency to come in and have a conversation. That day-to-day just kind of nuanced, the reality is topics regarding sexuality, just can come up, and just random conversation. It could be a random question a student could ask in class. The example that you mentioned of just reading a book that might potentially have two moms in it. To me, those are not, at least I would like to think that those aren't necessarily targeted and, intentional kind of school decisions, or school programs that are put in place. Those are just kind of those part of normal life. I mean, the reality is these topics and these situations and scenarios, it's part of everyday living, and it's things that kids are exposed to. And
mm-hmm. And there,
There's also a worry about protections for school counselors. In your position, what if you try to notify a parent and can't reach them? Or maybe you didn't think that that was an instance where you needed to notify the parent, but then the parent disagrees. Are you worried about repercussions under the law? Is there penalties for counselors?
I mean, there's definitely some provisions in the law, you know, to allow for parents to be able to kind of, you know, whether it's express their concerns or share those things. I'm not aware of any specific provisions, you know, that, you know, obviously, you know, every licensed educator, you know, we work under kind of those educator standards, you know, so there's always those kind of avenues, you know, that a parent can explore. But I definitely think some of the ambiguity of the law, it definitely has school counselors and other educators concerned. You know, when you see words like, you know, a significant, you know, change in a student, well, what constitutes significant? You know, what one district will define as a significant change might be different than another district, as well as what one parent, you know, deems as a significant change could be different than another parent as well. So some of those, I guess some of that language, you know, is I think where a lot of the concern comes in. Just kind of knowing exactly what, you know, those things are.
Yeah, I could see that for some students, going from all A's to having a couple of B's is a significant change, whereas a real significant change would probably be going from all A's to all F's, right?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
So if you had a student and you were wondering what was going on, I mean, I'm sure you sometimes call students into your office. I mean, I'm thinking like students don't always seek you out. You know, maybe you call a student down and say, hey, you used to be a straight A student. What's going on? Is everything okay? But then you have to tell the parent about that. Is that a whole nother issue?
I mean, it can be, because again, in a lot of regards, we would already be reaching out and touching base with parents. You know, if I have a student that I see a real drastic, significant change with their grades, I mean, that's oftentimes going to trigger that conversation regardless of the bill. You know, I think what kind of the example you gave, you know, there's just that concern. Some people, you know, feeling like, well, does a change from an A to a B, is that, you know, is that significant?
Yeah.
You know, most of us would probably say not.
For students, just one final question. For students struggling with issues of sexuality and gender identity, if they come to a counselor, in the past, would you involve a parent in that discussion, even if the student says to you that they're worried their parent is going to react badly? I mean, if they say their parent might react violently, I guess that gets into the abuse part versus just being mad. So in the past, before this law, if a student would come to you and say they're struggling with their sexuality or gender identity, would you notify the parent?
I think it would be situational, you know, so obviously, you know, we have students that, you know, have some questions or they might be questioning things, you know, and they might just be seeking some guidance. They have some conversation, you know, and try to get some feedback or just some clarity on some things that they might be thinking. A lot of times in those situations, that generally wouldn't be something that we would, you know, would necessarily trigger a parental notification. You know, but obviously, of course, sometimes, especially with some of our LGBTQ students, our trans students, you know, who might be coming in and requesting, you know, whether or not the school refer to them by a different name or requesting use of a different restroom, those kind of situations. Obviously, in those situations, you know, we would have conversations with the kids and hopefully, you know, their parents are supportive or at least somewhat understanding and that we can engage in that. You know, but for a lot of kids, you know, who are struggling with those kind of questions, they may not be at a level where they are very public about it or they're very out about it. And they are still kind of just grappling with some things and stuff. Those are especially some of the students that we're concerned about, because if it is something that their parents aren't aware of, that they're not comfortable with their parents to know about, you know, then they have to be mindful about how they're going to have those conversations with adults at school.
That was Sean Grimm, the executive director of the Ohio School Counselor Association. Thank you for joining us today.
Yep, thank you.
Coming up, we're going to talk with an LGBTQ advocate about her concerns about the new law. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Ohio's Parents' Bill of Rights recently became law. Supporters say it puts parents, not the government, at the center of a child's education and health care. Critics say it unfairly targets LGBTQ youth. Rhea DeBusey is the Director of External Affairs at Equitas Health, a nonprofit community health center. She leads the agency's legislative affairs work at the Ohio State House and U.S. Congress. Equitas Health is one of the largest LGBTQ and HIV/AIDS healthcare organizations in the country. Welcome to All Sides.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So you testified in opposition to this bill, and in your testimony, you cited concerns that it would likely force the outing of LGBTQ students to potentially unsupportive or abusive parents or guardians. What has the reaction to this law been within the LGBTQ community now that Governor DeWine has signed it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of folks in the broader LGBTQ plus community, particularly our youth, are definitely really concerned, right? You know, HB 8 uses really alarmingly vague and really unnecessarily broad language. And, you know, this is really what happens when legislators try to do teachers' jobs. And I think that, you know, a lot of folks are really concerned about that. And they're ultimately really concerned about the negative implications this is going to have, particularly for youth who are still figuring out their identity and who have a safe space in their schools.
Now, I talked with the representative who sponsored the bill in the first segment, and he was very adamant that parents need to be involved in their students' education. Parents need to be involved in their students' lives. There's better outcomes when parents are involved.
Yeah, and I definitely don't think anyone is arguing against that. Parental involvement is huge. I think that a lot of the concerns that folks have, particularly with this, is what happens with parents who aren't necessarily going to be supportive of their child's identity and, you know, worrying about what kind of negative implications that can have, particularly given the stats behind LGBTQ youth homelessness.
Now, he said that if there was a concern about the home life and the parent was not involved, that educators are mandatory reporters mm-hmm. of abuse. And so would you consider a child and their parent fundamentally disagreeing about something about a child's life? Is that abuse? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, it depends on like individual circumstances, but certainly we know that LGBTQ plus youth do report higher rates of dealing with things like abuse, emotional distress, et cetera, particularly when they're in unsupportive families. So I would kind of pivot to, you know, our friends at like the Ohio Counselors Association for that kind of insight. But ultimately, you know, I think that what a lot of advocates are worried about is, does this open the door for increased rates of abuse, particularly when you have a non-supportive parent? And the stats on LGBTQ plus homelessness and the challenges that LGBTQ plus youth face, particularly when they're not in supportive homes, those speak for themselves. We know that that has negative health disparities, both mentally and physically, for our queer and trans youth.
Do you know, does there research on who a student typically comes out to? Does it happen with a school counselor or a trusted adult at school more often than at home?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with any research on that, but I would say that like an organization, GLSEN, which is a national LGBTQ plus youth advocacy organization, they do an annual school climate report that has some pieces of that data. That's a really good question. I know based on my days, I spent a decade working in higher ed. I had plenty of students that I was the first person that they came out to, even in college, and they hadn't talked to their family yet, and they were needing support, and they were worried about, you know, what impacts that might have on their relationships with their parents, their family, siblings, et cetera. You know, it's a very emotional thing, someone sharing an aspect of their identity. And unfortunately, even in the year 2025, we still, you know, live in a world where there's plenty of kids that worry what that's going to mean for their relationship with their parents and worry about whether or not coming out is going to impact that relationship negatively.
Now, the representative would say that he would hope that if the counselor mandatory has to tell the parent that the student came and talked to me about this, he would hope that the parent would be involved and supportive. In your experience, that happens, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There are some really like powerful, lovely, beautiful coming out stories of very supportive parents. There are several great organizations of like PFLAG chapters across the state with super involved, affirming parents and grandparents. And those experiences definitely exist. Unfortunately, experiences like mine exist. I didn't have the sort of happy, very like sort of pleasant coming out story with my biological parents. And that experience does exist. And unfortunately, in the year 2025, you know, there are still folks that have that experience.
So, and so if you would have talked to a school counselor, would you have approached them and said the sentence, please don't tell my parents, but?
I don't know. I knew in my specific circumstance that it was not something I wanted to share until I was able to sort of be more independent away from my familial household. And so, you know, that decision is deeply personal for everyone. And, you know, ultimately, we know that when kids are hiding an element or an aspect of their identity, that that can have real negative mental health impacts. And I think that's what advocates are worried about here.
Mm. And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Rhea DeBusey, the Director of External Affairs at Equitas Health. How do you feel this law conflicts with the State Department of Education and Workforce's core principle of equity?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, a lot of folks paid a lot of attention to the Ohio State Board of Education and Department of Education about two falls ago, I believe it was, when they passed this resolution, the state school board, that was widely deemed as anti-LGBTQ. And the Ohio Department of Education has a really impressive strategic plan, Each Child, Our Future, that really emphasizes what schools across the state should be doing. And equity is one of those core principles. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about equity, it's making sure that every student is getting the resources that they need to succeed. And unfortunately, HB8 really flies in the face of that. It's not actually, quote unquote, honoring each student by emphasizing equity and the specific needs of individual students, which is one of the major shifts that the Ohio Department of Education outlined in their specific policy and strategic plan for schools across the state. And so, unfortunately, you know, this kind of situation seems like it's legislators in Columbus telling school districts what they need to do for their students rather than empowering those school districts to continue making the decisions that work best for their students and their student populations.
There's provisions in the law about sexuality content where the school has to tell parents if they're going to be teaching or talking about sexuality content. Mm-hmm. It's a very long and involved description of what sexuality content is. It goes into the nuances. Do you feel like But then the School Counselors Association that I just talked to said that it comes up naturally in conversations, especially in high school. How do you feel about having to the schools having to like explain themselves to the parents?
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of parents being more involved in their students' lives. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, as someone who spent 10 years in higher education, you know, that's a wonderful thing to see. And I don't think that anyone is hoping that that doesn't happen in terms of parental involvement. I think the concern is, you know, what kind of burden is this going to put on teachers, you know, for any sort of incidental remarks or comments? And the bill tries to address that, but I think a lot of advocates are concerned that it doesn't really do it well. And, you know, there are other portions of this bill, like the so-called LifeWise Amendment, that was really pushed through at like the 11th hour during lame duck. And ultimately, the public should have had more opportunity to weigh in on the final version of the bill. And it was something that got rushed through during lame duck with a number of different changes to it. And I think a lot of other advocates are concerned about the sex ed angle, particularly in relation to this bill.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, regarding sex ed in Ohio, the state mandates a requirement that sex ed has to happen, but it doesn't mandate the specific content. So the content is really decided at the district level. So what that basically means is that the district gets to decide what that content looks like based on what their students need. Parents can already opt out of that. That is a thing that parents can already do. That is a right parents already have for their children. But now legislators in the state house are basically wanting to take that control away from the districts. And they're wanting to basically consolidate that level of decision making about what can and can't happen in these classrooms here in Columbus. And ultimately, you know, there's a reason the Freedom Caucus and the U.S. Congress has not been interested and has been in opposition to some of these parental rights bills. And that's because, you know, it really, for them, reeks of big government. And I was kind of surprised that this, you know, ended up passing, frankly.
We only have about a minute left, but in your testimony, you talked about how the law doesn't require medically accurate instruction materials. That's something that you wanted in there. If this was going to pass, you might as well make it medically accurate.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this bill has a lot of implications for sex ed. And in Ohio, sex ed has to happen, but it doesn't dictate whether or not it has to be sex ed. So if legislators are telling teachers what to do, why are we not giving students medically accurate information at the end of the day?
Right. Okay. Well, you know, this is enacted. And in the last 30 seconds we have, are you going to work? What are you going to do with schools to help them navigate this? Is that something your organization can do?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're really working to support some of the education focused organizations like Honesty for Ohio Education and National Association of Social Workers. And we're really focusing on driving folks to their resources to make sure that educators, school counselors, et cetera, are really empowered with the resources they need to continue supporting students despite the setback.
You've been listening to All Sides. That's Rhea DeBusey, Director of External Affairs at Equitas Health. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you for joining us, listeners. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.